you, dear people. Welcome to For Real. Today's episode is like a deep dive into the world of a writer. My absolutely delightful guest today is the New York Times and USA Today best-selling author Heather Gudenkauf. And if you have not had the chance to read her books yet, I recommend starting today, preferably by a roaring fire, under a blanket. And the willingness to ignore everything else because Heather writes page-turning thrillers that are the best way to spend a winter's afternoon. Heather's brand new release, The Overnight Guest, kept me up way past my bedtime, and I know you're going to love it too. We talked today about the writing process and how to keep going on the not great days, and also about how Heather weaves together three stories in her plot lines at once and does not lose her ever-loving mind. I think you're going to love this conversation and learn so much from my friend, author Heather Gudenkauf. Heather Gudenkauf, thank you for joining me on For Real. It is an honor to have you here.
I am so thrilled to be with you, Kimberly. It's always a good day when I get to talk to you.
Oh, I feel the exact same about you. In fact, we've gotten into some lovely escapades in the past going on. Yes, talking about books and together at book festivals and at libraries. And one time I got to meet your beautiful parents. I mean, I feel like the lucky girl in the room.
Oh, it's always so much fun. Always so much fun to be with you.
Well, thank you for taking the time because this is a fun season. You have a book coming out really soon and I can't wait to talk about it. I'm super having to calm myself. That was my calm version of how I feel about your book. So we'll get into that. But before we get too far in, tell us who you are, who you spend your days with, and what fills your days.
Oh my goodness. So I'm Heather Gudenkauf, and I am a writer. And as of late, my days are filled with my family, as always. I spend a lot of time at home with my husband and one of my daughters who is just getting ready to graduate from college. So exciting. And other than that, I spend as much time as I possibly can with the other members of my family. That's, you know, where I spend my days with my folks and with my other kids and with my sidekick who's sitting right over here, Lolo, who goes with me just about everywhere, hangs out with me, is my writing buddy. So my world is filled with writing and books and family, and that's just how I'd like it to be.
That's wonderful. Lolo, we should say, is a dog.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. And she, everybody knows Lolo.
Is kind of famous. I mean, she has her own, she's part of your podcast. She's a regular feature on your Instagram feed. So she has her own following. You also grew up with a lot of siblings and they are an important part of your life. I've been honored to meet one of your sisters. You guys are all really close. And I'm wondering in that, I'm just assuming a loud family. I mean, my family's fabulous. Fairly loud. What were books to you?
Yes, I'm the youngest of six. So I have five older brothers and sisters, and we range between 10 years. We were, six of us were born, and God bless my parents.
No kidding.
But it was such a fun household, and busy and loud and full of activity. And I, you know, books were huge to me. I was one of those kids. And I've talked about this often. I grew up, was born with a profound hearing loss where I can't hear at all in my left ear, but I hear just fine on my right. But it's a unique kind of hearing loss because it comes with its own challenges. And one of those challenges is, busy places, classrooms, loud areas can be very overwhelming for someone with my kind of hearing loss because we're constantly trying to figure out where sound is coming from, focus on the person who's talking. So I would come home from school exhausted, and then I'd come home to this, you know, wonderful but very busy household, and I would just want to escape. And vehicle for that was, like for many, books. And so I would gather up my picture books, depending on how old I was. When I was younger, it was, you know, the picture books. And once I got older, it was, the Ramona books by Beverly Cleary and Judy Blume and Laurie Ingalls Wilder, and I would retreat. And this is the best story I have to tell, and I tell it all the time, but we have this toy box that we had when I was growing up, and I kind of claimed it as my own. And when I get home from school, I pull out all the Barbie dolls, stuffed animals, Legos, and toss those aside. I'd grab whatever book I was reading, a pillow, a blanket, a flashlight, climb in, close the lid, and I would escape into books. And that's really where I credit my love for books and reading to have come from.
That toy box. I love that image. I completely relate to that image. I think books are a beautiful escape for lots of folks. In fact, I'm reading a lot right now for my work and doing some coaching with that. And I'm still not satiated. I mean, and there's something different about fiction that we get to kind of dive into a story and not be pulled out of it and stay in that toy box. I just love it that you started that at an early age. I'm wondering when you knew that it wasn't just the reading that you loved. When did you pivot to, I think I could make some of my own stories?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing. I was a journal writer, and whenever I could in college take a writing course, I did. But my path was to be a teacher. And so that's what I did. I was a teacher, and I love teaching writing. I love teaching my students about the love of writing and the love of storytelling, but I really didn't take time to write my own stories until I was married. My kids were school age themselves. And I just, I was telling my students, follow your dreams, dream big, you can do anything you put your mind to. And one day I realized, that's not just for my students. That applies, practice what you preach. And I decided I had stories to write. And so the day after school got out, I packed up my third grade classroom to get it ready, for the summer, as teachers do, and pack away your supplies. I bought a journal. And I started writing my first novel, The Way to Silence, in longhand. I didn't write the whole book in longhand. Even then, I knew that wouldn't be very efficient. But then I transferred it over to the computer. And by the time I was ready to get my classroom ready for the fall, I had finished a very ugly first draft. But I finished a first draft, and I tucked it away, because I had, school and family and lots of other things to do. But I'd done it. And that was the beginning of, this wonderful journey for me.
I just want to add, that book that started on longhand in a journal ended up on the New York Times bestseller list, ma'am. You're not saying that out loud, so I will say it out loud. And it was on for a bazillion weeks.
It was quite remarkable, and just really a wonderful experience. During a challenging time for my family personally, and it really was a bright spot, a lot of fun. So grateful for that experience.
Oh, it could not happen to a kinder person. And I also love that you busted yourself. Right. I think I'm kind of a teacher at heart too. I used to be a teacher a million years ago. I taught Spanish in ESL. And same. I was so good at infusing courage in other people and telling them, dream big, do the thing, just go grab it. And then not really listening to that for myself. So I think there are lots of folks listening who can identify with that. The idea of a dream, the idea, and writing feels about as crazy as saying you want to tap dance on Broadway. I know there are dancers, but how did they get there, right? So what do you say to the person listening who is in that same spot? There are so many things on the list, and the persistent dream of, man, I would love to write a book, is on that list, but everything else is more emergency status. What do you say to that person?
Yeah. And I can totally relate to that. I was working full time. I had three young kids, my husband, my dog, a family. And I just made it happen in the quiet moments. It wasn't, a sprint. Even though I did finish that very ugly first draft in a short amount of time, but I stole moments. I stole moments for that. And I determined what was important to me and what I could let slide. I let laundry slide. You know, I taught my kids how to do laundry, and, you know, they were a great help. My husband was super supportive and helpful as I was writing. And I had no idea where this was going to go. I had no idea. It was just me and my journal and this idea. And I decided at that moment, because I knew nothing about publishing, I didn't know where it was going to end up, that I was doing this for me. It was a story I needed to tell, to see if I could do it. And I would get through writing it first and enjoying that process, which I absolutely loved, and then see what happened next, and took it step by step. Definitely a marathon in that sense. But my advice to people is just do it. Is that a popular saying for someone? Shoe brand, maybe? I don't know. Totally swipe that. But that's really breaks it down very simply. Tell your story, and you don't have to tell it right the first time. And I think a lot of people get frozen by that need to get it right. And I'm the poster girl for not getting it right the first time. Revisions are a huge part of my process, but I get the story down and then hard work, I say, comes, you know, with the revisions and the getting it the way it should be.
I love that idea of stealing the moment. I think we wait for the time when someone says to us, I have an attic in a lovely cottage in England. Would you like to go write your novel now? And that's just never going to happen, right? I mean, have you found that, is the new one your 8th or 9th novel? That's coming out.
My ninth. Yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to talk about that. But just before we dive into the book in particular, I'm wondering if that has changed. So when you started, you had littles at home, and now they aren't. And so do you still feel like you have to steal the moments, or is your time different now?
My time is different. I do have a little bit more flexibility with my time. The stolen moments in when my kids were little were in the car while I was waiting to pick them up from basketball practice, or early in the mornings, and late at night. And so those were the stolen moments. But now, priorities have shifted. I am with my folks a lot. I'm down with them at least a couple days a week. And, you know, I still find that I, you know, need to steal some moments, because in writing, though I'm not in the classroom and working with the school district anymore, with writing and being an author, you know, other expectations come with that. And so I still have to make a concerted effort to carve out that time. And, you know, it's never wasted. You know, there's lots of ways of writing that are not sitting in front of your computer and typing. You know, there's a lot of planning and thinking and brainstorming and note-taking, research that goes along with that. So I do find I still steal those moments, but I also am fortunate to have a little more flexibility with that as well. I don't like to go to bed at midnight, so I don't have to do that. You know, I can write earlier.
Right.
Because I've gotten older.
Yeah, my best work does not come at that hour. I thank you for saying that out loud. I think a lot of aspiring writers feel the weight of, I should be doing this every day at the same time. And sometimes that just doesn't work. Sometimes it's your laptop waiting for your kids to get done with basketball. practice. It's not a glamorous moment, but it is a moment. And behind you, on for those of our listeners who can't see you or not on YouTube, she has a whole lovely wall of all of the covers of her books. And some of those books were written in the stolen moments. And so that's my encouragement to the folks listening. It's not going to be perfect and it's not going to be seamless, but one word at a time, this thing can happen. You're such a good example of that, Heather. Okay. I have to ask you this question. I talked with my daughter this morning. I was like, I get to talk with Heather Gudenkauf today. And she said, okay, what's your first question? And she actually nailed it. She knew I would ask this first. So I'm already behind. But here is my question for you, Heather Gudenkauf. You are one of the kindest, most generous people I know. Seriously, I've known you for many years. You are just a lovely human being. You grew up in a very stable and loving home with rock star parents and lovely siblings. You adore your siblings, your husband, your kids, your Lolo. How on earth do you write novels about murders, grisly murders? I mean, to tell you, these are page turners. And every single time I read your books, I see your sweet face and think, where is this hiding?
I get that question a lot, and I'm not sure, except I do, I can credit it again to my family. You're right. I grew up in this really supportive, loving family, and with parents who allowed me to read the books I wanted to read and to, be myself. And I have a share of love for mystery books and thrillers with my dad. And, very early on, we were trading back books. And, with my whole family, we trade books back and forth. And I used to sit on the couch with my dad and watch, creepy shows. Creepy for the day was like, and you're too young for this, I'm sure. But there was a show called Night Stalker.
Oh, sure.
And it was... with Gavin's somebody.
I know that show.
Yes. Everybody else who's younger than us is Googling that. But it was a fabulous kind of creepy, campy show with this guy solving mysteries. And I was just absolutely fell in love with it. And I love reading mysteries. I love thrillers. And I really wanted to, try my hand at that. And so I grew up in a home where I could, read what I wanted to within reason and watch what I wanted to within reason. And it really helped develop that imagination in me and allowed me to kind of fearlessly explore that on the page, and those kind of darker corners of humanity.
Okay. So I'm so curious about this because when you are knee deep in the writing, do you have to guard your heart at all? I mean, there are some things that you have to research in order to make these things just leap off the page. And let me just have a mini commercial. You guys, Heather's newest book is called The Overnight Guest, and it's coming out. We're probably going to air this episode right before it releases. And I'm just saying, get thee to a computer and or your indie bookstore or your local bookstore and buy this thing. Because I just will warn you, you can't do laundry and you won't feed your children because nothing can happen when you're reading this book. You're just going to want to keep reading the book and ignoring all the things that are normally important to you, like nutrition. It is such a page turner. And it's nothing like your life. I know, because I know a little bit about your life and I'm positive you haven't experienced this. And so when you're writing and you're researching and having to know things that I won't spoil, do you ever have times where you just have to like step back and not think about that? Or are you fully able to immerse yourself in the story and then you just go back to your life? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, it really depends on the project and different aspects of the project. Yeah, there are definitely times in the books that I write where I'm so deeply enveloped in the story and, difficult stories that, as hard as, as visual as they are when you read it, that is that's what I see too. And what I put into the book, and it's hard and I do need to step away. And that's why, you know, I go for long walks with Lolo and step away from there. But I also think I, as I'm writing, I have, you know, the foresight to know that while my books are, you know, be dark and deal with some really difficult and challenging subject matter, I always like to, you know, hope, I like to think that I infuse some hope into my book.
Absolutely, you do.
And that's my light at the end of the tunnel. And that, you know, that I hope readers, you know, can see too, is that yes, we, you know, in this fictional world I've created, these characters are, you know, put through terrible situations, and but their courage hopefully shines through, their reliance on their community and others, on themselves, and you know, that flicker of hope. So yeah, you know, I do have to guard myself, but I think one way I do that is knowing that there's flickers of hope throughout the story as well.
Absolutely. You said it beautifully. There is this stubborn insistence of hope in your books, which is one of the reasons I love them. I love it that they're page turners. I love it that I don't know what's happening around the bend. But I also love that I know that you are going to find in your characters and in the story these bright glimmers of what's true. And I'm wondering if that's a conscious decision. It sounds like it is. Not every story in real life ends with that. And so it seems like you have decided that as a conscious decision as a writer to end the story, to infuse the story with light. Mm-hmm. Is that a decision for you?
Yeah, I really think so. I think, although what a happy ending looks like, you know, may not be a happy ending but the fact that they traveled through it and made it through, it's a happy ending in itself, and what people do with those in those circumstances. But yeah, I do. It's important for me that, you know, that the characters are on this journey, and they may go through their darkest days, but there is something to look forward to. There is something, you know, a hand reaching down to help them up, or, you know, just reaching into themselves to get themselves out of difficult situations.
Hi friends, just a quick break here to let you know about a fun resource we offer our favorite listeners. You are in that group, so you need to head over to KimberlyStewart.com to sign up for my email newsletter. Here is my solemn promise. I will not crowd your inbox. I don't believe in that, and I find it highly irritating in my own life. Second, I will not send you cat videos, ever. And third, I will send you updates on things I love and think you would too, like fantastic giveaways, reading recommendations of what's on my nightstand, and even what I'm wrestling up in my kitchen for all these people who live in my house and never stop eating. In short, my newsletter is what we would cover if we could just all teleport and have coffee together. Our super easy sign up is at KimberlyStewart.com, and we will even send you a free book just for joining in. So come on over. It's a party, and we want you there. And now, back to the conversation. I have some questions about your process. I do not write what you write, and I am in awe of people who can write mystery and thriller. I don't get you. I mean, you're a couple things. First of all, let's talk about the cell phone and the internet. Does that ruin things for you? Like you have to be so creative, right? And having people not be able to Google or call people when someone's coming in the house.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, modern technology isn't always a gift, especially in a writer's world. So, you know, right away, we have to find a way to remove that from the story. And for my new book, it's no secret. It's a big storm. A big blizzard comes through that. And, you know, we live in Iowa, that once in a while, those crazy things can happen where we end up out. I mean, just talking about the derecho from a while
totally.
Back, the big storms that knock out internet and, you know, other forms of, and cell towers as well. So it does happen, but, you know, we do have to plan for that in our writing. And that's it's a different kind of challenge, you know, and every once in a while I'll ask my editor if I can write historical fiction. Just for that, a historical fiction thriller where there's no technology. So
you sold it. I'm just saying you sold it. I did not come to times when I thought, well, why doesn't she just reach for the phone? I completely fell into this story and did not emerge until the end. And so good job.
Thank you.
You did it. I'm wondering about how in the actual world you did this. You have, in this book in particular, you have three different time periods that you're talking about. Three very distinct narrative voices. We're going to get a little fictiony here right now. How did you do that? You had three, you're juggling these three plates all the time, and then they converge at exactly the right moment. Heather, do you have does your office look like a war room with lots of post-it notes, or how do you do this?
I've said this earlier too. I write very ugly. So I get, you know, they get this very ugly first draft down. And I did have the three perspectives throughout the story. And, but, you know, going back, you have to go back and really define those voices and work. And I'm really lucky. I have some great early readers who read through my things and, you know, are able to help me out and kind of find that path. I have an amazing editor at Park Row who can see the big picture, because when you're writing, you know, you're so in the weeds. So taking some time to, you know, step away from the project and also having other folks read the project as well can help with that bird's eye view. But, you know, I really wanted to write like a true crime book within a fictional novel. And this was my attempt at it. And I really enjoyed, you know, this process and, you know, interwoven with present day and a third story where we're not sure how it all fits in, but hopefully it all comes together.
It totally did. It Thank completely you. Did. And I didn't see lots of things coming. So I loved it. I'm wondering about the small town Iowa idea. I think all of your books, right, are set in small towns in Iowa. And of course, we are both Iowa girls and quite loyal to our state. I'm wondering if that is, if you ever regret that. Like, is there ever a point in the writing process where you're like, man, I wish this were just in Boston so she could hide in a museum or something? I mean, you really, there are strengths inherent in that choice and also probably some challenges.
You know, I've never once regretted keeping my books set in Iowa. And, you know, I love the state. I love this, you know, the stories that come out of them, the people, the communities. And so that's been, you know, I'm not going to say easy, but that's something that I felt very comfortable with. And I will continue to do so. Although my next book that I'm working on now, I have stepped a little bit out of Iowa, and I find that very difficult.
Do you?
Yes, I'm finding it very hard because, you know, this is my place. This is my home. And but the story that I'm writing, it lends itself to it. And this, you know, so I'm kind of driven by the books and the stories as well. But yeah, every single one of my books to date have been, you know, set in small town Iowa, based on real Iowa places that if you've been through the state or lived here at any given time, you probably would recognize some of the towns that I'm writing about. And, you know, it's kind of my love letter to Iowa. I just had a great upbringing here. I've lived here since I was about three and with my family. And it's hard to put into words, but I try to do that in my writing in these, you know, awfully scary thrillers. I hope like the beauty of Iowa also comes through.
It totally does. Even when people are being murdered. Right. Okay. So Heather, today is a good day, right? Today is a day where we're talking about your new book. We're two friends having conversation about what we love to do. I'm assuming not every day of your writing life is like this. It doesn't always have the perk. And so talk to all of us who are midway through a project, beginning a project. How do you deal with discouragement after the book is out? And maybe some of the reviews aren't the things that you love to hear. How do you deal with disappointment? Coach us on that part of the writing life.
Sure. Yeah. You know, the writing life is filled with ups and downs. There's these quiet moments where it's just you and the book, and that's just blissful. And, you know, that's my favorite part. But there are moments, and even in that, where you're filled with self-doubt. And to me, I tell myself, just trust the process, just write and get it down on paper. You can always go back and fix it. And, you know, for most cases, that's true. And, you know, when you have to release a book into the world, that comes with, you know, it's so exciting. We're, you know, very honored that I'm in a position where I can do that, and so lucky. But then with that, there comes some insecurities as well. Not everybody's going to love your books. Not everybody's going to write rave reviews about them. And, you know, I'm, you know, working on my 10th book now, and, you know, it always still pinches, but I do have a better perspective now. You know, I've been doing this for some time now, that, and I do know not my books aren't for everyone. And there are going to be people who love them. There are going to be people who say it's not for me, and that's okay. That's okay. And I'm writing for those people who enjoy thrillers, who enjoy small town mysteries, and, you know, want to be swept away into a twisty story. And I'm not going to please everyone, but at the end of the day, if I write the book that I want to read, it's a good day.
Okay. A couple more questions for you, Heather. I would love to know what's next. You mentioned you're working on a book and it's not in Iowa. So can you let any cats out of the bag, or you well, do keep these?
Yeah. They always change so much, but I can say I'm working on my 10th novel right now. It's very different from what I've written before. We take a trip out of Iowa, although there's some basis in Iowa, so I'm not neglecting my home state entirely, but I think it's going to be really fun, really make you think. And I'm really excited. I'm getting really close to getting that first draft done and digging in to do the really hard work. And I'm very excited for people to read that when it's ready.
Do you feel a little emotional whiplash? Because we're talking about The Overnight Guest, and also you're writing a new book. So do you ever feel like you have to have your head in two different places? Because the PR, marketing, the press about this new release is dovetailing with creating a new book.
Yes, definitely. You know, you have to be able to be aware of those boxes and be able to step into those when you need to. Because, you know, as much as I love the books that I've written, and I'd love to revisit them and talk about them, once you're onto a new project, that also becomes so all-encompassing, where all I can think about are those characters and what's going on in their lives. But it's nice too, because, you know, to be able to step back and you know, visit Wiley again and, you know, the other characters and Josie. And yeah, it's like, you know, old friends day, you know, back at the farm. And
it's awesome
to do that too.
Yeah. Only fiction writers can talk about pretend people as if we're visiting them on their farms.
That's right.
I get you.
Yeah. No good.
I have a final question for you that I ask all of my guests, and this is right up your alley. This is a book nerd question. So it's a two-parter. One, what is a book that you find yourself referring to or recommending over and over? It can be, you know, we are fans of the backlist on this podcast, so it can be a very old book, something that you return to. And then part B, what is a book on your nightstand or on your list that you're super excited to dig into next?
Well, this is the one, I wish I have like multiple copies of it too. I collect editions. So my favorite book of all time is My Antonia by Willa Cather.
Oh,
and it's an oldie. It's, I mean, yes. That's an oldie, but I read that when I was in my late teens and absolutely fell in love with it. Reread it or parts of it every year. Every time I see a new cover, a new edition, I snag it.
You do.
Yeah, I do. I get some looks because I do. I have my little Willa Cather section of my shop.
I love that.
So I love it. It's such a beautiful book, and it's such a sweeping story of, you know, resilience. And,
it is.
Just love it. So if I loved reading before, after I read that, I just, the power of the word and the beauty of the written word really just hit me then.
That's a great recommendation. And set in the Midwest by a Midwest author. Oh, good one. Good one.
Yeah, I do. I love it. And what I'm reading right now, and it's a book that's coming out this winter. I'm so excited about it. So good. Beautiful Little Fools by Jillian Cantor.
Okay. So if you're a fan of
The Great Gatsby, this is a retelling of The Great Gatsby from the women's point of view. And Jillian is one of my go-to writers. She writes typically historical fiction and with a twist on it, like this, for example. And it's just so good, so good. And very excited to keep, working on this and reading it. But this is one that I know people are going to love, especially if you're a fan of The Great Gatsby.
I love that recommendation and that cover.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Absolutely stunning. Is that an advanced reader's copy or that's the actual? Oh, it's beautiful.
This is
the actual.
Oh, it's advanced. No, it's advanced reader's. And just imagine what the real one's going to be the final one, excuse me.
Yes. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, good recommendation.
Beautiful Little Fools coming out later this winter.
Wonderful. Two wonderful recommendations. I'm going to throw in a third that you recommended to me, and it's called The River of Doubt.
Oh, yes.
Didn't you tell me to read that book?
Yes. That's the nonfiction one I will tout forever.
It's
Candace Millard, River of Doubt, the story of
Theodore Roosevelt.
Roosevelt's journey down the Amazon River after he had been president. He took this journey down the Amazon with his son, changed his life forever. Riveting. They didn't teach this in American history.
No, they sure did not.
And Candace Millard is an amazing writer. And she tells the story I think of a fiction. There's nothing dry about it. Nothing, not that nonfiction is dry, but she has a way of weaving this story to make you feel like you're there.
Absolutely novel-esque in the writing. Yeah, it's wonderful. Thank you for that recommendation because I obeyed you and I read that and I've given that book to several people. It's a wonderful book. Heather, thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I am just thrilled to have a little bit of time with you, and I'm thrilled about your new book, The Overnight Guest. I can't wait for everyone to read it with flashlights under the covers, and it's so good. Congratulations.
Thank you, Kimberly. And like I said, it's always a good day when I get to spend time with you.
Thank you for being here. Well, if you're a reader, I think you know what's going to be next on your to-be-read list. And if you're a writer, I feel like we just got our marching orders on how and why to just do it. Just write it in the carpool lane, before the house is awake in the morning, when it's finally quiet at night. Write that book, friend. You are the only one who has your specific story to tell. Thank you for joining in today. If you picked up a few ideas for yourself, or you think this conversation might be helpful to someone you know, take a screenshot and share it on the socials. We would so appreciate you spreading the word. We also love reviews and ratings and follows on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you love to stream, so thank you in advance for helping in that small but mighty way. We have more fun things coming up, so head back here soon when we continue the conversation and keep learning from and laughing with each other here on For Real.